Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So hello, Joe Kahn. Thanks very much for appearing on the Press Gazette Journalism Matters podcast. Really great to have you over here from New York.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Yeah, managing editor of the New York Times, no less. And I guess you're here, and a few other big cheeses from the New York Times are over here in London at the moment to talk about international expansion and the plans for the New York Times in London and Europe. So. Perhaps kick off by just telling us what you know, what the big idea is, and what the plan is in terms of expanding over here.
Sure. Well, we very recently relaunched our international print edition, which we've rebranded as the New York Times International Edition. It had been called for the last few years the International New York Times, and. In a previous life, that was known as the International Herald Tribune.
Yes.
So it's gone through a couple of iterations, but I think the rebranding is a testament to our determination to make the New York Times itself the primary kind of global brand of our news organization to internationalize and globalize the core report of the New York Times, rather than thinking about a print strategy which was parallel but somewhat independent of our domestic strategy. So we're really kind of uniting behind a big push make us, we believe, the first major American news organization to really think about the total global audience as our core audience. We remain, very much an American news organization, and we're not apologetic for that, but at the same time, we consider the readership that we attract here in Europe and in Asia, in Latin America and Africa, Middle East, as a primary part of our readership base, and we want to do more to cultivate that and grow that.
So at the heart of that, you've got this print edition. Just tell me a little bit more about how the platforms work. You've got the print edition, you've got the digital print edition, then you've obviously got the website. It's extremely important.
Our main push for growth internationally now is digital. We attract 35 or 40 million unique visitors to our digital properties on a monthly basis, which is about a third of our total readership on a monthly basis. So two-thirds is American, one-third comes from outside the United States. And we believe that 35 or 40 million number can grow substantially as we invest both in better and more relevant coverage around the world for that audience and improve the experience that people have when they come to our digital properties. We intend to serve that readership up with the best of the New York Times that we think is going to be the most impactful and relevant to them. And we've invested quite a bit in improving the experience on the on apps and the mobile web and on our website. And there's much more to come in that area as well. So it's a combination of continuing to invest in the coverage that we have about the world, for the world, and improving the experience that readers have when they come to consume it at the New York Times. That's our main push. The new print edition, or the relaunch print edition, we think is a much better designed product, and B, is a better reflection of the digital priorities of the New York Times in today's world. It's not trying to be a first read for breaking news for people in multiple regions around the world. It's meant to showcase the very best of New York Times enterprise, investigative reporting, deeper analytical reporting, and opinion. And for the first time, actually, a print edition of the New York Times is featuring properly labeled opinion on the front page. A rotation of our best columnists are appearing each day on the front page, as well as a kind of centerpiece piece of enterprise, you know, a big feature story, an in-depth look at an emerging issue or an investigative report, and then something that we're trying to surface more is our culture reporting, or you know, a slice of life that's a little bit off the news, which we're also on a daily basis trying to feature on the front page. So it's much more of a showcase of the best of the New York Times, not trying though to serve up, you know, necessarily what happened yesterday in your immediate vicinity. We're assuming that our readers have multiple sources of information, mm-hmm. and that the print edition is kind of a value-added, in-depth, enticing read for a curious set of people all around the world.
So how many journalists have you got now based in London, and how's that going to grow? And also, how many of those are focused on this international expansion? Because obviously you've got people that will work with,
yeah,
the folks on the New York edition here as well.
There's about, for the newsroom in London, is 35 or 40 people. That includes our UK News Bureau, which has six or seven people. It includes a hub, what we call kind of a rewrite hub, but it's a team of people whose job it is to work with our correspondents around the world and get breaking news up online in real time whenever it occurs. Throughout the day, wherever it occurs. So there's kind of a rewrite team, what we call our continuous news desk, which has an operation here in London. We have several of our top story editors who are based here. We have a video team here. And then we have audience development and kind of a digital editing team, which runs the home screen, homepage of the New York Times in non-working hours in the U.S. So that's a sizable team. And then we have a copy desk here, too, a team of people who, do the primary line edit on stories, both those that are breaking in the non-U.S. hours, but also stories that are actually produced in the U.S., but they're made ready for publication in the early hours in the U.S. by the team that's here. And then there's some business and financial reporters who are here. So it's a pretty big team here in London. It's one of, if not the largest office, a news bureau that we have outside New York itself. Competitive with Washington.
And is that going to expand as part of the...
I think it is still expanding, yeah. We have more and more... our video team is growing, especially the breaking news video team. We're making a bigger investment in in visual journalism, which requires, you know, a kind of deft cooperation between traditional news reporters, but also our multimedia team, and they have ambitions to have a stronger London component to what they're doing. Before too long, we really want to do some deeper... I mean, we've always had a big news bureau in London with the primary focus of covering the UK. But as part of our global expansion, we want to think much harder about how to broaden and expand that report for New York Times readers in the UK, as well as for readers outside the UK who are interested in what's happening here. So we expect that we'll be making additional investments in what we hope will be high quality coverage of the UK itself, with a goal to generating more readers and ultimately more subscribers in the UK.
So I think the New York Times has said that it's spending $50 million over 3 years on this international expansion, yeah. Which obviously sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot compared to what, say, the Daily Mail spent on, and The Guardian, and the UK spent on their international expansion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And several years on, they're still yet to kind of make any money from that,
right.
Although they've developed a huge audience.
Yeah.
So with that kind of lesser investment, why is the New York Times going to succeed, going the other direction where they've yet to succeed financially?
I think we're learning in part from both what we've done in the past and what some of our peers have done in terms of their global expansion. We're much more focused on creating bridges to our core news product, mm-hmm. rather than creating expensively produced separate editions of the New York Times. We want to have a central... That's part of the reason that we rebranded the international print edition to be identical to our domestic edition, rather than thinking of the international audience as being a separate thing, or thinking of the UK audience or the Australian audience or the Canadian audience as being fundamentally a separate audience that needs to be served with its own edition, with its own newspaper, with its own website, rather than thinking of ourselves as coming in and competing in the UK with The Guardian or with the FT. Or, you know, we are still going to be the New York Times. We don't intend to have 50 people or 70 people in places like Australia or the UK or France or Germany. We're making prudent additions to our staff in order to increase our competitiveness on what we consider to be the biggest global stories that have local resonance. Mm-hmm. But we're not trying to cover, you know, Westminster for a UK audience. We're not trying to provide a kind of rival version of breaking news that there are many fine local providers for. We're doing New York Times quality stories. We're just doing more of them. We're going to present them more immediately, and we hope more impactfully to a local audience. We're improving and investing in the digital experience of coming to the New York Times. So $50 million is a pretty good chunk of money, but it would not be enough money if we were trying to, you know, invent a new New York Times for the UK or for Europe. We do think it's a good amount of money to extend the brand of the New York Times, improve the reach of the New York Times, and bring more of our target readers around the world and introduce them to the experience of the core product.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it said that there's a sort of land grab underway at the moment for people who are going to, or a race for people who are going to be the globally recognised news brands. There's only going to be space for, you know, a set number of those, and is the hope that the New York Times becomes one of them, alongside maybe, I don't know, the BBC and others, who knows?
We think we'll be one of them.
Yeah.
I think we're confident that we are one of them, and we think we can solidify and grow that audience in the next few years. I do think that we can't take for granted that we'll always be one of them. It's going to take continued investment, making sure that we have the best journalists covering the most important issues around the world. That takes continued, not just continued vigilance, substantial investment. And we think that we have the best digital news product of any of our peers, and that making that more widely available to a global audience is going to help solidify that position. But we expect to be, you know, one of the few leading news brands that remains, you know, what we think of as a destination site for.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The curious, engaged, globally minded reader all around the world.
So just on the business side of it, obviously things are tough here, really tough here in the UK, business of journalism, and New York Times has had its troubles, but hopefully seems to be... seems to have maybe cracked it a little bit in terms of your business model. So can you tell us a little bit about how that's going? I think we would call it a metered paywall. So what's the state of play with that at the moment? Is that still as encouraging as it has been?
The growth in our digital subscription business has continued to be very strong. In fact, in 2016... we added more digital subscribers in absolute numbers and on a percentage basis than at any time since the early days of the introduction of the paywall in 2011. We benefited from, you know, what we would call a very robust news cycle this year, which was the American election, which was fascinating both to readers in our core market and also to readers around the world, and I think it drove quite a bit of traffic to our digital properties and helped introduce people to not just to our election coverage but to the broad array of coverage the New York Times does. And basically, we believe when there are tentpole events like a U.S. election, there aren't going to be many like this one, but when there are events like this, that is a giant advantage to us because it draws in a lot of traffic, calls attention to the kind of excellent political coverage that we have, but also gives us a chance to introduce a broader array of readers to everything else that we're doing. And that's the combination that tends to lead people to say, you know what, this is not just another breaking news, commodity breaking news site like the kind we can get for free on Google News or Yahoo News or other platforms. This is a different kind of reporting. It's much more in-depth. It's more accurate. And the array of different kinds of stories that they have, both everything from features and lifestyle to, you know, award-winning investigative reporting globally, is unmatched by other news sources, and we feel, okay, this may be the moment for me to say, hey, I actually do think it's worth a subscription. So big events like that are what we think drive the growth in our digital subscriptions, and this year has been really really encouraging.
What's the number now, the digital subscribers?
Globally, we expect to end the year north of 1.4 million digital-only subscribers. Around 200,000 of those come from outside the United States, so the bulk still is inside the United States, but the growth in digital subscribers outside the U.S. has been even faster than the growth inside the U.S.,
yeah.
which is encouraging because the news cycle has been a very U.S.-centric news cycle with you know, the Trump-Clinton election. Even so, that is what has helped propel, you know, that rapid growth in our digital subscriptions outside the U.S. So we're pretty encouraged by the performance this year.
Where's the meter set at the moment in terms of the number of articles you get for free? Does that shift around?
Ten
a month.
Ten a month.
Yeah. And is that going to be the same internationally, or are you going to let that slip a little bit while you kind of...
We don't have a plan at this point to tighten the paywall internationally beyond what we do in the United States. I mean...
And as far as the sort of business model goes internationally, is it... What's more important? Subscriptions are the most important thing now, same as the US. I think
subscription first.
Yeah. So that's the main revenue source.
Honestly speaking, we're going through the same challenges with both print and digital advertising that our peers are undergoing around the world. The advertising market is changing fast, but advertising is still a big source of revenue for us, and we're committed to improving the experience for advertisers and continuing to get our share of the advertising market. But the growth area for us, the reliable growth area, is digital subscriptions, and that's a business we think we can continue to scale. So we're focused very much on making sure that everything we invest in is aimed primarily at growing that readership base and the subscriber base. We're not going to be investing in new products which are designed exclusively for advertisers.
So why is the meter paywall going to work in the UK for you when, as far as we can, it hasn't worked for anyone homegrown yet? So apart from specialist titles like the Economist and the FT,
yeah,
make it work. But you just wonder why a reader would pay a subscription to the New York Times for, you know, obviously got when the Guardian, say, has got 500 journalists focused,
yeah,
largely on serving a UK audience, and they're giving it away for free, and they don't seem to think that a media paywall can work.
Mm-hmm. We don't expect to get exactly the same audience that the Guardian has in the UK or many of the other very competitive UK media titles get. And I do think the UK has an extremely competitive media landscape, which is not crying out for an international brand to come and shake up. I mean, that's not really our model. We do think, though, that there are very few UK titles that provide the depth of reporting that we have from around the world,
mm-hmm,
or from the United States,
yeah,
which is a very important story for readers here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think that any of our peers do the same kind of multimedia and visual reporting that we can deliver on a daily basis on our digital properties,
mm-hmm,
and that when people come and sample what we have and become habituated to the New York Times, they'll realize that it's worth paying for. It's not going to be, it's not going to be 5 million people in the UK. We're not You know, we're not looking for a giant audience, but we do think that UK is one of the most sophisticated places in the world, and there are more readers, more paying readers for the New York Times here than we're currently getting. We do currently get, we have had a decent response to our digital subscription product in the UK already, so it is tested to some degree, but we think we can grow that number substantially.
Yeah. How many people have you got? How many subscribers have you got in the UK?
We don't break it out by country, and it's smaller than some other markets. It's certainly smaller for us than the Canadian market, for example, but it's not insignificant.
Yeah. And so the big challenge in the UK, it feels like over the last year, is the Google and Facebook really hoovering up all the display advertising in a rather depressing way for journalists. I mean, how do you see the way you interact with those platforms now in terms of the content you give them and how you use them?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, there is a kind of frenemy, reality to Google, Facebook, and Apple as well. We want to be significant players on all those platforms. We get a lot of readers through Facebook and Google, and also through the Apple News product. We want to continue to make much of our journalism available on those platforms, both, natively and to allow people who consume us there to share links to our stories on all those platforms and be very open to experimentation with them. At the same time, increasingly those platforms want to keep their, their readers on those platforms, not sort of linking off them. So they want to host content themselves. They want us to create it natively on the platforms, and that is a challenge for us because we want to be there, but we don't think it's really viable financially for the New York Times to be a content provider for, giant platforms like Google or Facebook. Ultimately, we need to create a destination experience for our readers, which is an improvement over what you can get on any of those platforms. We think that actually we have done that, that's why we can find nearly 1.5 million digital subscribers. Almost all of our subscribers, I would say all of them, interact regularly with the iOS platform, the Facebook platform, certainly with Google and Google News, and yet they find enough value in the New York Times as a destination site that they're willing to pay us. None of that revenue comes through Facebook or through Apple or through Google. That's revenue that we collect ourselves. So we think that model has been tested. We need to grow it and improve it, but we're not going to get there by doing battle with the Facebooks, the Apples, the Googles of the world. We have to find the right way of cooperating with them.
Okay, thanks. Just a couple more quick questions. That's right. It's always an encouraging story. You see, you guys expanding. I mean, how do you see the landscape of journalism at the moment, the future of journalism? So obviously, over the last decade, it's been a horrendously tempestuous time, hasn't it, for journalism? But do you see things improving a little bit, how do you see the thing from your international perspective?
I mean, it's a bit of a mixed blessing. There are some, very encouraging signs of being able, the New York Times and other leading news organizations, you mentioned The Guardian, for example, being able to reach a much larger global audience with our journalism as people become habituated to consuming news on, quality digital platforms around the world. We can have really kind of amazing reach and impact with the stories we do, and we've seen that from others as well. That's a good sign for journalism and for media companies. And at the same time, the reality is that most traditional media brands and many newer digital media companies have relied pretty heavily on advertising for their dominant source of revenue in the past, and that market is changing so quickly and so dramatically that it's threatened the business models of just about everybody. It's threatening the business models of new digital media companies arguably even more dramatically and quickly than it's been threatening legacy media companies, which have been accustomed to sort of a secular shift in advertising. But the but digital media is challenged as well. So I think journalistically, the opportunity just continues to increase in terms of the business model of companies whose primary business is creating great journalistic content. They're having to be more nimble, more ready for change, more adaptive to new opportunities than ever before in order to survive in this environment. So it really does feel like a mixed blessing for us now.
Okay, well, look, thanks very much indeed for your
You're
time.
You're welcome.
And really great, and good luck with the international expansion.
Thank you. Thank Appreciate you. That. Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.